Hello everyone, you are listening to No Side But People Side podcast.
This podcast is proposed by Interstice Fajawat, a French-Syrian initiative aiming to share analysis but also more intimate insights about life, society and politics in the Levant and beyond. To read our articles, you will find the link to the webpage in the description of the podcast.
If you like it, please share it with your friends and support us on Patreon. Hi everyone, welcome on the podcast No Side But The People Side. I am Cédric, I will be the host for this first episode. With Hosama, we wanted to share with you some personal insight about migration and exile from a Syrian perspective. Hosama grew up, studied and worked in Syria, first in the southern countryside and then in Damascus, before the plan of leaving the country came in 2015. Hi Hosama.
Hi everyone.
Could you just summarize these few years between the revolution in 2011 and 2015 when you left the first time Syria?
So yes, actually I started my studies in 2009. I made architecture studies in Damascus University. And after 2 years in 2011, the revolution started in Syria and I was participating in the protests. And you know, like this period was like it carried all the huge change for the Syrian people. And we, like the students, we were participating, making actions in universities mostly. And we were also going on protests, like for me mainly in Damascus and in Sweida. And in 2 years, you know, like the protests, they did not last. And I continued my studies until I finished in 2015. And the idea of like traveling, going abroad, making studies abroad, it was existing like since I was like 18 years old, I can say. And after I finished, the idea was still there, and especially in 2015 and after all what was going on in Syria and all the like wave of the people who left. So I also thought about leaving, and Turkey was the first choice because it was the only choice for Syrians somehow to go if they want to start a life in a country where there is this possibility, and it was open without a visa at that moment. So yeah, I went to Turkey but did not work there, and I came back after 3 months. I came back in 2015. I started working in the humanitarian field, and I kept like working in this field until I left. And in 2019, we met together, and we saw each other for the first time in person in 2020 in February in Beirut, because you could not enter to Syria. And somehow we wanted to be together also, like to start a life together. And also it was still my wish to travel, to make studies, and I had the acceptance to start a master's program. And I applied for a visa, and like very miraculously somehow it worked very fast.
Once you arrived in Germany, what were your living conditions there like?
When I arrived, or we arrived together somehow to Paris, and then we had to leave immediately to Cottbus, to this little city. It's next to Berlin, to the south of Berlin, where the university, the Brandenburg University, where I studied. I did not stay very long. I mean, we stayed 4 months, and it was COVID. It was planned curfew. There was no life, and it was in winter, and there was no students. I mean, there was no one, because no any student came because of the COVID. So somehow it was it was empty, and it was very cold, and we did not have actually interactions with the people. And if we had some like very everyday life interactions, they were not very nice, I would say. So it was not easy, I would say. And because also we were together, so we were trying like sometimes to do things, but I could not say I have a memory of the city. I have nothing, no any memory. I just remember that there was this small river that we could walk a bit along this river, and we went to see this huge site for the mining. And these are, I think, in these big forests. And the forest in winter, like where there are no green. So, I mean, yeah, I could not say that it was not the place that I was attached to at all. Even the university, I went only once. Like, so after we were in Cottbus like we thought that okay, it was COVID, there was nothing, no one, no university. I was studying, it was all online, so somehow it did not matter where we are. And then we thought maybe we go to a place where we have a bit more life, a bit more sun, a bit more like interactive atmosphere. And this is why you thought actually about going to Marseille. Because I mean, it's known Marsilia, like Marseille, Marsilia, that it's a city where it has a lot of diversity. There are people who are coming from everywhere. It's a city on the sea, somehow like the only city in France that you can have access to the sea without being in a rich city, let's say.
And what about the French Pays des Droits de l'Homme, the country of the human rights?
This I have a lot to speak. I would say that my experience, whenever I think about it and I compare it to other experiences, specifically with my friends, it's a bit also specific because I came here, I did not came alone. And at the same time, I was learning densely, you know, like I was experiencing the city, the life in Europe. And at the same time, you were telling me your experience in France and in and the life in general in Europe. So somehow this is how my conscience was being built, you know, around the life in Europe. So I had many contradictory thoughts and ideas because I wanted to be excited, but at the same time, I was immediately at the same time seeing all the hardships and the downsides of living in Europe, the downsides of living in a capitalistic system. This was a shock for me. Later, like after 2-3 years when I live in France, in Europe, I understand what does it mean to have this cultural shock, because I had it and I think it was very, very strong. I don't know if it's related to the sensitivity of the person or it's everyone experienced this shock the same. But I think when you live, when you come from a place like Syria and you come to a place like Europe, it's like another universe here. I don't know even from where to start to list, you know, like the things that were, that everything was new, you know, like, and for me as someone who's coming also from a modest family, like, you know, many things also I was experiencing, seeing it, seeing the life of people, seeing what the people, how they live, what they own, how they think about their lives. I started to think here about what I want to do in life, because it was always the question before, what you need to do. You have things that you need to do. And this, when I came here, I started to see that the people actually, they think more about what they want to do, because there is a possibility sometimes if you put some effort or if you try to follow what is in your head, maybe you can reach something that you really want to do, you know.
More about, like, how do you feel about the French society and what's your relation to the social fabric there?
I mean, today I was reading this small, like, post on Instagram on aljamhouria.net. They were, like, asking people and saying that there is this wave of, like, reverse migration, no? That the people who are living in Sweden and who has the nationality, they are going back to their hometowns. And they say there are several reasons. Some of them are economic, but the most are related to the feeling of belonging, the questions of identity, the feeling of comfort, of integration and all this. So many people, they said that but they don't feel it. Even though they spend years and years living in this country, even though they are living comfortably, like they have their comfort life, but they're not comfortable, they're not happy. They don't feel well, like, in this place. So they decided, even though in their home countries, like in Iraq, for example, one of them, it's hard. But they said, when I arrived, we felt better there anyway. So I think it's... yeah, I think I have the same feelings because, you know, I mean, here, I think in France, just to be also fair, The people, they are more social. I like, if you compare to Sweden or to the northern countries, the people can be more social here, like especially the young or the activists, or if you are in a big city like Paris or in Marseille. I would not say that you will have this very big detachment like from the people, but anyway, even this small that exists here, it's not enough. I mean, anyway, the people, they have interest in you, but for a limit, you know, and they don't go more. And somehow, also, if you want to be more involved with them, also they put for you a limit. So somehow, you cannot. There's always, at some moment, the door will be closed in your face. You cannot go further, you know. So, or you have to really, like, pressure yourself a lot and accept, you know, to be sometimes, or a lot of times, like, overwhelmed, depressed, disappointed. But you say, okay, I try again, but at some moment you will stop trying again, you know, like to go to see people, to go to events, to try to, you know, like to...
It's a lot of efforts you have to do.
Just yeah, to... it's a lot of efforts and...
to try to belong.
Somehow. Yeah, and you don't be, I mean, you don't belong. Every day, whenever you go out from your house, especially if you're in the city, there are, I don't know, tens of situations that will remind you that you are a stranger here. I mean, and especially, for me, what I can remark from being in a big cities, like when I walk in the big cities, when I take the metro, when I walk in the streets and in the neighborhoods that are not, you know, the fancy ones. For me, it's very violent. I mean, it's a huge megapolis, you know, where people from all around the world, they come. And you see also all the people who are, I mean, in France, I think it's a lot of people on the street. They are living in the street, whether they were French, whether they were migrants, whether, I mean, there's a lot of people who are living in the streets in that freezing cold here, you know, and you have... I don't know, I feel for me when I walk in the street in a city here, there is a feeling of, I want just to arrive to the, you know, cocoon, to the room I have, just to feel a bit, you know, less, I feel like you are naked outside, I don't know, it's scary, I would say, I mean, I don't feel comfortable, you know, and I don't know if I would live in a smaller city, it will make a difference. It's just there is no, how to say, warmness, even in summer. I'm not speaking about the weather. I mean, I don't know. There are many small situations that you see how the people that deal with each other, how they deal with homeless, how they deal with, I don't know. It's, there are some, I mean, when someone smiles to you or says a nice word to you, you are like, you want to explode from happiness, you know, because wow, like, and you want to tell everyone about it, that today, like, someone was nice to me, because it's rare. It's fucking rare here to have this, you know, situations where it's a kindness, you know.
And you would rely this, you would connect this with culture, or you would connect it with capitalism? Do you have an idea about where this coldness come from?
I mean, I would not pretend to be making an analysis, but of course, I mean, this system is very brutal here. This capitalistic system, it's crushing the people. I mean, yeah, you have no choice but to work and to torture yourself in working just to, you know, to have the means to go on the weekend, to go out, drink something with your friends, and to come back during the week to just, you know, like work like a slave. So of course this way of life, it puts the people under huge pressure. And this is why also here, like the vacance, the vacation notion is like, it's sacred, because the people, if they won't not have this, they would explode, you know, like you cannot. And I think, yeah, it's the capitalistic system. It's very, it is crushing the people. I mean, it's like everyone speaks in rights, you know, or you have the right or you don't have the right, you know, it's like it's knocking your head all the time, you know, like people, they are just like dealing at some moment like robots with rules, with, it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's tiring. This kind of life, it's tiring. I mean, it's like people, they are tired of this system, but somehow they are tired also to go to fight it more, you know, because you want to enjoy the life. You want to live your youth years also in a good way. And you don't know which is priority for what. And of course, also if you want to have children, if you want to move to a city or to go back to the village, I mean, and I think because, I mean, here in Europe, this capitalistic system since decades now, so it's coming into, you know, with the cultural thing, you know. So how you raise your children, how they interact the children in school, and how they get introduced to life, you know, and to the job market. And so, I mean, I think it's coming from everywhere somehow. And if in the family itself with the children, you don't really try to keep this human thoughts and this this critical mind, you know, like that the children, they should not look at everything and accept it just for how it is. But this is, I think, where the activists somehow, they try to make a difference, you know. And even the activists, they are not all the time, you know, like fully aware about.
Yeah, this is know. Something I would like to ask you also about, like did people ask you how you feel as a Syrian or as a foreigner? Did you feel curiosity? Did you face people like who asked you more about you, like even the people who are more closer to us, like from the family or the people or my friends? Did you feel that the people, they are interested in you?
I mean, from not really. If I want to say about my first impressions, no, I was, when I was going, because I was almost always going with you to events, to many like activities, and we were meeting your friends. I mean, of course, there was always an exception, like one or two people that they are different than the others, and because they speak English. So this helped, you know, to make a discussion between me and this person, despite you, you know. You don't need to be there. You don't need to translate you. So first there was the language, and here in France there is a huge issue, a huge problem regarding languages. People, they don't speak languages. They speak only French. So even English, it's like it's a struggle. No one speaks English here. So it was the rare case where some of the people that we met, and the people like your connections, let's say your friends, who they spoke English and who had connection with something coming from abroad, or they have some kind of origin that are coming from outside of France, they were the only one who I managed to make some click with them, some connection, you know. But the other people who are activists, who are very involved even, you know, in questions related to migration, to you know, to all this, you know, borders and to
identity politics.
Yeah, also. Identity politics and all this. They don't really, they are not interested in you. And this, I found it a bit strange, you know, because I was thinking, if I'm alone, you know, coming alone to some kind of event, like a festival, like this festival that are made for, you know, on a very, festivals that has no finance, let's say, so they are very
grassroots,
and you come alone. But I think you would feel bad, not bad, I mean, you would, because you are because you will be alone somehow. The people, they are not interested in you, you know, like I can sit alone for the whole, you know, like for 2-3 hours or something. You go, you want to eat something, drink something. And the people, they see that you don't speak the language, you are a bit alone, you know, like you are just standing alone or something. They won't come to you, or you need to go to them to ask something, to open a discussion. And you cannot do this simply because you don't speak French. And the people, they don't feel comfortable to speak English here. So there's no discussion, there's no connection somehow. Mm. And this is very hard. I mean, I mean, you are coming from a different environment, from a different background, from a different culture. So you have the things that you feel comfortable with. You have things that you don't feel comfortable with, you know. And I felt that at some times, the people that immediately judge you here, even if you are coming from a different background, it's like you have to be very roots like them. Even this idea of, you know, like the roots idea, I mean, I was not familiar with it, you know. Because when you come already from a background that is already poor, let's say, you know, it's not this, we don't have the same approach. Because here I think the people, they, especially the activists, most of them, they have a middle class background, you know, so they like to go to this roots way of life. But when I came here, I mean, I did not have a privileged way of life. I was living the roots, you know. I had a very, it was a hard life, I mean, in Syria. It's enough just to imagine how you are struggling with everything, with all the everyday life. I mean, you spend like many nights just crying because you cannot sleep, because it's too hot, or because it's too cold, or because it's, I mean, it's... So for me, it was like, okay, but I don't want to be in this roots way. Like, I don't want to go to a bathroom that is just disgusting, dirty, you know, because this is not for me the way, I mean, why? Roots, poor, does not mean to be dirty, you know? This was a huge shock for me also. Like, I thought, okay, I don't want to come back anymore to these places.
Being an Arab in Europe, does it make you face specific challenges, you would say?
Yeah, of course. it's just sometimes people, they have less challenges because they're more lucky. They are, I don't know, like, because I'm a woman, because I am, I don't wear a veil or something. So challenges that, like, other people, maybe it will be like more as me. But of course, I mean, beginning from the name on my CV, I think the people are confused. You know, like when you apply for a job, first they cannot pronounce your name and they don't know what is this name, and immediately it's a foreign name, you know. So this is the first thing that you are, I think, at somehow excluded immediately at some places.
Did you feel, just because you speak about the CV, did you feel at some point that you needed to put your photo on the CV so the people, they see you instead of imagining you?
Yeah, I had to say this maybe, but yeah, maybe it was at some moment I said, okay, but maybe I need to put my photo. So the people, they just don't go in all the directions in their head. This is me. It's like this.
But it's mainly, I mean, about, it's interesting because, I mean, it's how we are forced to do things that are giving some credibility.
Yeah.
To credit to Islamophobia, for example.
Yeah,
that you are not having a veil, because I remember we had this discussion, like, I put my photo so they don't imagine that I don't know what, but you don't want to work with Islamophobic people.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you want to have all the changes on your side.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes you think about this.
Yeah, because it's like you are contradicting yourself.
Mm.
You are doing the things that it's not in your principle to do it, but somehow... Or you don't do it at all and, like, you cannot survive. I mean, okay, you say bye-bye Europe. Or you have to do things that you would like, maybe when you do it, maybe at the end, if you get the job, but you speak about it in the job. You say, but I did this and that and I was thinking like this. I mean, you try to speak about it somehow to make people more aware, you know. And but I think it is, I mean, it is a big challenge. I mean, I notice also, like, when we walk on the streets, in the metro, between Brussels, for example, and Paris, where you see Arabic writing to tell the people where to go, you know, like in Paris, in France, you never see nothing written in Arabic for people to, and it has a huge community of Arabic speakers, you know. But in Brussels, for example, I noticed this somewhere, you know, in the metro and the public places, you know. It's like, I mean, when they put all the languages, but Arabic is always not there, you know. It's like...
Sometimes they put the Japanese or Chinese.
Yeah, this ignorance, it's like on purpose. They are making messages to you. I mean, for me, I notice them because I am always observing around me, you know. So for me, each time I go out, even if you are not thinking about this thing, but you see it, but you remember again that you are a migrant, you are living in Europe, nobody cares about you here. And you know, this racism, this it's existing. It's existing. You are reminded by it every day. Yeah.
What does France or Europe lack that you can have in Syria or in the Levant?
So I also don't want that my like critics for here also does not show that in Syria or in Lebanon it's like the paradise. It's not at all like this. There are huge issues there to overcome and to deal with. Yeah, maybe I just want to feel this that I'm walking in a streets that I'm familiar with. I want to go into these small cities that they are, for me, they are not violent. You know, my answer will be biased, you know, because also I miss this place, because I like this city where I'm going. I like the hometown where I come from. And it's not something nationalistic, you know, it's not about proudness at all. It's about just feeling of this intimacy, you know, like for me, if I imagine myself now sitting in this park in Sha'lan, for example, next to this crossroad where I was going with my friend with her little child, I love these moments, you know. It's just, I don't find them here. I don't know. Even the parks here, there it's.
They close at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. For example, like this is one example. I mean, there's life and there are people, they celebrate life all the time, you know. Here, they don't celebrate life. I don't know. It's like they're taking revenge of life or something. There, no matter how, like the people, they're poor, but they have no choice but to keep going on, you know. No choice. You have to keep going on. You have to keep fighting. And there are small gestures that the people that make, that make you believe always that there is goodness in this world, you know. And now in Syria, it's totally, it's a mess. I mean, it's a mess. Like these, also all these years, it proves that the contrary also, it's very strong in Syria. So you have this very contradictions, you know. After all this hardships that Syria suffered from, I think I want to be there to give also, like something, to participate, to be in solidarity also with
Now, after all what you said, we could say like that you feel uprooted.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a word that you would use? And do you think, is it something that may evolve with time by staying here longer?
Yeah, I think, because I think time can always solve these questions, you know, especially if you try to suppress these questions, put them aside, as I did actually, because if you remember the first 2-3 years, even they were super hard for me. I mean, I was suffering. I was really suffering from being here, and I missed the people there. I missed my family. I missed to be there, and I was feeling like a rejection to anything here. I don't know, and it was strange even for me. But at some moment, it's like there was a decision that, okay, you have to just to put them aside, this question, you know, not to keep them always in the front. So you put them in a drawer and you keep them, you know. But it does not mean that they are gone, you know. Even if you stay longer, they will always stay in your head. And it also depends on how much you are an emotional person or someone who is, you know, have some kind of attachment to things. But I think with age, it's always, you know, becoming easier. But not now. I think for me, at least I need 10 years until I reach this age where I think, okay, maybe now I can be more calm, you know, towards these issues. And, you know, but for now, I don't think I can. These things would not let me in peace, you know, these emotions and these feelings.
And do you have the feeling that your parents, that they can understand from where they are without never traveling before, despite to Lebanon, can they understand how you feel? Is it something you can share with them?
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, it's also something known about the Arabic world that they are emotional people, that they are people who are very nostalgic. If you hear the music that we listen to, it's all nostalgic. I mean, it is something that is, because this region, it was only having sorrows and tragedies. So there was always, you know, you are nostalgic for some feeling, for a nice memory or something. So my family, they're also having this, they want me there. They don't care in whatever situation, you know, because it's even my father who, his only concern is that we have the breakfast together, like in the morning at the table, you know, like it's like this feeling of, you know, being all next to each other, being able to be with each other. I mean, this was his main concern when I said that I want to leave to Europe, is just that, you know, like we want to see you. I mean, it's like it's cruel, you know, that you are going and that we always have to make a choice. Or you choose here or you choose there, and there's always something that you lack, you know. But sometimes you compromise because maybe I compromise the comfort life here to be next to the family, to be in a place where, you know, like you can go out in the street and say hi to all the neighbors, and just you can walk in and any neighbor and have a cup of coffee. And, you know, I mean, for me, these things, when I go there and I go walk, like the first day I arrive or the next day I go, I walk in the street next to home. But I feel very good. I mean, my father, he traveled also. He was in Qatar for 9 months. And I remember it was super hard for him. I remember even the messages that he was writing, you know, to us. It was very full of, you know, emotions. Because even that he could have stayed there more to make more money, and even he was offered to travel to Sweden, like to work, but alone. But he refused, because for him, I mean, he said that my children, they need me now beside them, because I was still at school. My brother and sister, they are also younger than me, they were at school. So for him, it was like, you know, detaching. It's like you are, I don't know how to say, tiré, like you are just taking someone, and it's
uprooting.
So
this is the symbolic.
And I remember when I wanted to say also I want to leave for Turkey for the first time, I mean, my father was crying also. I mean, it's just like they wanted to support me, and he was trying to, you know, to secure the money for me to travel, but at the same time they are, you know, like it's hard. And so, yeah, they will not only understand, they are very happy. And they will be more happy because we are coming back in 2 weeks, hopefully. And we are coming back with a project to make a documentary movie, plus this podcast that we are registering today for our first episode. Actually, this documentary we are very excited about, and it's like a project that we wanted to make since like 2 years now. And in this documentary, we want to go and meet the minorities in Syria. We want to go and speak to the communities there. So we will be moving from Sweida, then to Damascus, then to Homs, and then to the coast. We want to go to speak to the people there. We want to ask them about their life during the decades of the dictatorship, also during the years of the revolution and during the years of war. And now, after the fall of the regime, what is their plans and what is their hopes for the future?
Yeah, and this will come very fast, actually, because we plan to leave before the end of this month.
Yeah, hopefully.
So that's it, I think, for today.
Yeah, that's it for today. Mm. I think we said what we wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. And see you soon in the coming episode. This podcast will be our way to share with you our reflections during our stay in Syria. So please stay tuned for the coming episodes. And for this project to happen, we will need your support. You will find the link for our fundraising campaign in the description of this podcast.